Can you define crisis management for a lot of our audience is going to be smaller entrepreneurs, right? They're not going to be Fortune 500 companies where they may have dealt with big crises. Can you define that and maybe even put it in terms of what it might look like for a smaller business? What does crisis management actually look like?
Okay, sure. So I think crisis management varies dramatically depending on what type of business you have, as you mentioned, right? Like what could be a crisis to you would not be a crisis, let's say, to a bigger or huge company. But a lot of the times it's about how you're being perceived, your reputation management, right? And so it could be something like you may have said something wrong and now the way your business is perceived is going to be negatively impacted from a revenue standpoint. And so you need to apologize for that mistake, readdress your audience, reshape your brand so that people don't see you in that negative light. So that's like kind of, you know, small businesses. It could be, you know, dealing with investors. They have one perception of you, but it really needs to be something else. Like, and for bigger companies, it's things like anywhere from like dealing with sexual harassment to a board infighting to, you know, getting up in front of hundreds of people and saying something you didn't really mean and that doesn't really reflect who you are as a person and wanting to take it back and then repairing your brand from there. So it's so many different things. I mean, crisis management really does run the gamut. So anything that's like feels like it's impossible to handle from a communication standpoint, that's when you would call up and you would say, hey, I need help. I'm out of my depth.
Heroes are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger than life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen, the everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell. From the doctor saving lives at your local hospital, to the war veteran down the street who risked his life for our freedom, to the police officers and the firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur, the creator, the producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what? I can fix that. I can help people. I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks on the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, welcome back to The Hero Show. My name is Richard Matthews, and today I have the pleasure of having Adele Gambardella on the line and Chip Massey. Are you guys there?
Yes,
we are.
Awesome. Glad to have you guys here. I know we were just chatting before we got on. You guys are both in different parts of the country. So Adele, where's home for you?
Yes, yeah, so just right outside of Washington, D.C.
Nice. And Chip, how about you?
Yeah, I'm outside of Manhattan.
So you guys are both on the East Coast. Has it started to warm up for you guys at all yet, or is it still freezing out there?
It's still cold. I actually think expecting snow in New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not over here, but snow in New York. Yep.
For my audience that follows us around, we are still in Southern California for, you know, the last vestiges of the holidays here. And it did snow here all weekend, but because it's California, it's above the snow line. So we can see it in the mountains, but it's not on us.
Nice. Yeah. It's so pretty.
So it's sunny and beautiful here. And then if we drive over to the mountains, we can go into the snow, but that's where that is. So what I want to, before we get too far into the interview, is just dive into who you guys are and we can dive into your story. So you guys are the founders of The Convincing Company, which is a crisis communication interactive training firm with leaders 50 years of combined experience drawing from psychology, neuroscience, public relations, and FBI techniques. Then you guys offer Fortune 500 clients actionable advice and strategies to build, breakthrough, and repair brands. So with that sort of brief introduction, what I want to start the interview off with is who you guys are. Right? What is it that you do? What do you provide in the marketplace?
Sure. So one of the things we do is we help people get into the news. We help people get out of the news. We help people get the spotlight and hide when necessary. That's the long and short of it. And recently, we've been teaching people immersive learning techniques where you can get so much more out of your maybe binge addiction to true crime and mystery shows and using Chip's FBI hostage negotiation and special agent background to give people pointers on how to be better at things like forensic listening, situational awareness, targeted validation, getting to someone's unstated narrative. And we teach Fortune 500 companies how to do it.
That's really interesting. And so you guys might be some of the first like actual, at least Chip, actual like real world superheroes because you're a special agent and FBI agent. It's...
I'm more like a Mr. Bean character, if that will help orient your audience a little better. Yeah.
That's not true.
I go the opposite direction, but at least I do have the training. So, yeah, not the
cool. So, I mean, if we're going full comic book hero, you know, we could go with, I'm going to forget the guy's name, Agent Coulson in Marvel, right? Where he's like the FBI agent.
Right.
There we go. We always start the shows off talking about your guys' origin story, right? And so every good comic book hero has an origin story. It's the thing that made them into the heroes they are today. And we want to hear that story. Were you born a hero, or were you bit by a radioactive spider that made you want to start building a crisis communications company? Or did you guys start in jobs? I know you were a special agent and eventually move over to becoming an entrepreneur. Basically, where did you guys come from? And I know we got two people here, so why don't we start with Chip, and then we'll move over onto you, Adele, and we can talk about how you guys got here.
Yeah, so my story is I actually started out as a minister. I was a minister for 6.5 years, and that's kind of where I learned how to deal with people in crisis, that you find people in all kinds of states, you know, as a result of that vocation. So that became something that I was very comfortable with, helping people in their times of greatest need. But what I found was I still wanted to do something that was a little bit more exciting. And that's when I applied to the FBI, and it just so happened they were hiring and I got in. And what I found in this, Richard, was that I could use that skill set, that same skill set that I had worked on, developed, studied for, became very important to my work as an agent and subsequently as a hostage negotiator for the FBI. And so I started off at Washington, D.C. in the Washington field office there. And I worked in espionage cases. So I was, you know, trying to find out who the spies were, where they were coming from, and what their intentions were. And I worked a host of violations as a result of that, too. And then I moved over and I transferred to the New York City field office, where I became the hostage negotiator for that office. So that's me in a nutshell.
That's awesome. How about you, Adele? How did you end up here?
Well, I come from a long line of entrepreneurs, and I think it just skipped my parents. And then, because both of their parents were entrepreneurs, right? I bet my parents just looked at that and were like, that looks really hard. I don't think I want to do that. But then it's like 3 generations back, right? And I didn't even know I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I actually have a really good villain story tied to a boss who made me
Richard. You're going to like this.
Who wanted to make me an entrepreneur, even though I didn't know it. So I was working for this small agency, and I was very entrepreneurial even in the small agency. And I brought this agency, a Fortune 500 company, and sold it. One of her biggest clients she'd ever had, highest revenue generator. And one day she gets me in her like luxury vehicle. And at this point I'm driving like a Passat that's like, you know, like shaking all the way like to the office. She gets me in her like really nice Lexus. And she's like, I've got a surprise for you. Let's go take a ride. And I'm like, okay. So we take a ride and she drives me about 1.5 hours. And we get out of the car and it's like the frame of the lake house she is building, and she walks me through the lake house and she's like, I'm only building this lake house because of the client that you brought into my agency. And I thought to myself, this is my lake house. This should be my lake house. Like, I need to go do this for myself. Like, why am I doing that? And, you know, 20 years later, I actually go up against her and we win every time when against her in different bits. So that's my little story.
Quite the story on how you guys got here. So, Chip, I just wanted to point out, I actually started in ministry as well. I went to a Bible college and got my, I have my degree in preaching, actually. My preaching professor to this day is still sad that I'm not preaching at the pulpit. But because he said I was one of his more talented students, which is always cool to hear. But that's actually where I got my start too. And a lot of the ministry training for me turned into learning how to do instructional design and learning how to do storytelling. That's how we ended up in running a podcasting agency.
Okay.
Storytelling has always been sort of a, you know, a foundational thing for me early on. And that's, it started in my ministry training. So what I'm curious for you guys is, how do you go from hostage negotiator and working in a marketing agency to starting this company here that you guys have now, where you're working with crisis management for Fortune 500 companies?
Well, I can take that, Adele. I can start it at least.
Please.
So when I retired, Richard, you know, a few years back, I was trying to figure out what my best moves were going to be. How could I use what I had gained in knowledge and experience, both in the ministry and in the FBI, as a way to start my own business. And I was talking to a professor at Columbia University Business School, and he said, you know, the skills that you have are, you know, really, they're very marketable in business today. And so he really helped me see that, but I still didn't have a firm grasp on how I could communicate that to the marketplace, what it was that, you know, kind of set me apart and how I could tie those skills to the world of business. And I just so happened to run across Adele at an entrepreneur's dinner. And what, you know, the way those, you know, work there is that you kind of went around the table, introduced yourself, that kind of thing. And when Adele and I both heard each other's backgrounds, we thought, you know, there's something that we could probably do together. So we started talking. And then as I think that was like around August of whatever year that was. And as Adele was interviewing me, she was essentially, you know, pulling out the information that I had gained and how I did it. And so she goes, you know, there's a lot here. And what she did, Richard, was transfer that over to business language. And it just popped. Everything just kind of made sense. And so from there, it was a matter of her taking that and distilling it down. And we created a lot of IP around this. And what was funny with this, Richard, but terrifying for me, was that after, you know, just a few weeks of working together, Adele says, you know, what we have together just makes a lot of sense. Here's what we're going to do. In about 3 months, we're going to put on a masterclass in New York City. I'm like, say what again? And she said, yeah, absolutely. That's what we're going to do. And Adele works at a speed that I am not familiar with. I mean, she has this fantastic business mind. She knows the marketplace. She's, you know, she just comes up with ideas and concepts and makes it sticky, makes it make sense. And so we were trying to think, well, what would we call this, you know, masterclass? And she comes up with it again. She goes, we're going to call it Convince Me. And we put it on 3 months later. And sold out in New York. And we even had to add extra seats to accommodate the people that wanted to come additionally. And that became the title of our book that we just published with McGraw-Hill called Convince Me. So again, that's how it started. That was my kind of, you know, introduction into Adele's high speed world. And again, I was institutionalized, Richard. I was like, you know, 22 years, I was an agent, house negotiator. And that kind of thinking is dramatically different from how it works in business, but not dissimilar totally. So that's how I see it. Adele, maybe you can take it from there as to where we went.
Yeah. So prior to meeting Kip, I had my own PR agency. Mm-hmm. I had a staff, you know, and I got so sick of managing people. Like, really, that was like just exhausting for me after a while, right? Like, I had done it for 15 years. I'd been really successful. And I just was like, I really want to do something else, something more meaningful. I was in crisis communications. But one of the things that Chip brought to the table, I was successful in crisis communications. I had written one other book before. Yeah. But then when Chip came in, he really changed my approach to dealing with people in a crisis, and in such a smart and important way. Like, you know, I could get on the phone, like Chip says, I think really quickly, right? Like, it's like, you know, my ADHD, or, you know, like I have that hyper focus that really works for me, right? And so when I get in a crisis, I can see the pattern, and I'm 5 steps ahead of the client before they're even on the phone. So like, it's overwhelming to people when they're like, oh my gosh, I've been struggling with this issue for 3 weeks, you come on the phone in 5 minutes, you have the next 5 steps. And what Chip is really brilliant at doing, which I was missing, because you can't do these two things at the same time. We talk about this in our book a bit too, right? It's like, you can't give people the exact steps they need to take and also make them feel like you're empathizing with what they're going through. It is two different parts of the brain, right? So like, when Chip came in, he helped executives accept what was happening and also do what was necessary to move their company along in like the worst situation
they had encountered. And I could do, but it was hard, much harder to do while giving instruction. And I found that people most often resented when I was giving them the answer because I didn't move them along at the pace that they wanted to emotionally. And so what Chip brought in was that pace to be able to get the executive to not only believe in the solution, believe in our solution, believe in themselves, which is, you know, so indicative of everything that he did as a hostage negotiator, as a minister. And so when we brought our two skill sets together, like people were excited after we had a crisis with them. And they were like, wow, this is great. We have an opportunity. Like, this is so cool. Like, they enjoyed having us. Whereas before, I always felt like a divorce attorney. I'd walk in and they'd be like, Adele's here again.
What did we do wrong now? I really resonate with the whole, like, business is a fast-paced world. And then you're coming from the FBI world, which is, you know, like the B in FBI literally stands for bureau or bureaucracy. And so everyone knows in the business world, bureaucracy right. means things are going to go slow. And so starting a business somewhere, you know, with an entrepreneur who's fast-paced, I could see how that would be a major shift for you.
And like I tell you, it's different with Adele, too. I mean, her speed is, you know, she, you know, you have 10 speeds on a bike, she's got 20 and she will go, you know, it just, once she sees a path forward, I mean, it instantly moves. Yeah.
But Chip's really good at like being super considerate about what, you know, we talk it through and we brainstorm together. We really, you know, have a good cadence in how we come up with ideas, how we rule things out, that kind of thing. I mean, I think this really, he brought balance to my entrepreneurship journey. So like, you know, that was certainly important.
So what I want to do before we get too far into the rest of the interview, because I think the next couple of questions are really going to dive into what it is you guys do. Let's start with, can you define crisis management for a lot of our audience is going to be smaller entrepreneurs, right? They're not going to be Fortune 500 companies where they may have dealt with big crises. Can you define that and maybe even put it in terms of what it might look like for a smaller business? You know, like, you know, maybe like mine, who's not quite $2 million yet and only has 10 or 15 employees. What does crisis management actually look like?
Tip, do you want to give that a go or do you want me to? Okay, sure. So I think crisis management varies dramatically depending on what type of business you have, as you mentioned, right? Like what could be a crisis to you would not be a crisis, let's say, to a bigger or huge company. But a lot of the times it's about how you're being perceived, your reputation management, right? And so it could be something like you may have said something wrong and now the way your business is perceived is going to be negatively impacted from a revenue standpoint. And so you need to apologize for that mistake, readdress your audience, reshape your brand so that people don't see you in that negative light. So that's like kind of, you know, small businesses. It could be, you know, dealing with investors, they have one perception of you, but it really needs to be something else. Like, and for bigger companies, it's things like anywhere from like dealing with sexual harassment to a board infighting to, you know, getting up in front of hundreds of people and saying something you didn't really mean and that doesn't really reflect who you are as a person and wanting to take it back and then repairing your brand from there. So it's so many different things. I mean, crisis management really does run the gamut. So anything that's like feels like it's impossible to handle from a communication standpoint, that's when you would call up and you would say, hey, I need help. I'm out of bike debt.
Here's my follow-up question to that. Is this world more difficult or less difficult now that everything everywhere is recorded in perpetuity online?
Oh, it's definitely more difficult. Yeah. However, you know, and what starts to happen is like, a person might have an issue and they may call us up and they say, you know, oh my gosh, I feel so embarrassed. I did this, or we lost these three customers, or this one customer said this bad thing about us and our employees are upset with us on this site or whatever, right? And what we like to say is like, you are making this decision for the first time because this feels like a crisis you've never seen before. And when you call us up, what we say is we've made this decision hundreds of times. And so we know what the likely outcome is going to be. You're doing it for the first time. Why take that risk, right? Go with someone who has dealt with this issue hundreds of times. Because if you go with your first instinct, a lot of times it's wrong. That's the interesting thing, right, Chip?
It's,
I mean, you kind of talk about that a lot.
Yeah.
It is counterintuitive. What the market wants from you is normally not what people, and especially what lawyers, advise leaders to do. I know that's poking the bear a little bit, but right, Chip? I mean, that's been our experience.
That's kind of like another kind of big learning curve for me was to understand that so much of what comes out of a company in terms of, you know, understanding and trying to explain and apologize for what happened is first gets a layer of legalese around it. If they involve, you know, an attorney that isn't perhaps in tune with how things come across to people, it can, you know, it's the most horrible thing when, you know, one of the crises that many of the schools are dealing with right now is the fentanyl crisis, right? And so many kids are, you know, having trouble with addiction and, you know, this the overdosing as a result of that. And the things that come out of the communication sometimes is just unfeeling. It doesn't have a human touch to it. It's just, this is what we recommend you do to, you know, keep your child safe. But it lacks that concern, right, Adele? That connection to the parent, like, well, what are you going to do? And that's something that Adele's so good at spotting immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times it's about companies taking accountability for what they may have done wrong and doing it in a way that consumer can still trust them again once that issue has passed, right? And the issue can vary tremendously.
Concepts we talk about a lot on this show is the idea that businesses are supposed to be, and it's not always done this way, but businesses are supposed to be in service to their community, right? And not the other way around. And so what I'm hearing from you, Chip, is that when they put these legalese messages out that are more CYA, right? Cover your ass, rather than acknowledging their participation in your community, right? And that's where, like, that's what people are actually looking for is like, hey, even as a business, you're a member of our community and you're supposed to serve the community first, right? And so that the communication needs to reflect that.
There also a lot of times lacks any emotion at all, right? So like, you know, and lawyers think that's what is necessary to protect their legal interests. And a lot of times what it just does is just ramps the community up. It's like, okay, so you're super vague. You're not taking any responsibility. This is in language I don't understand or does not come across to me as feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just continues to like snowball. And by the time they come to us, they've put out like 5 messages that legally are right. They're right. They're just not right for their audience. Yeah.
Crisis. So what I want to dive into then is your guys' superpowers that you've developed over the course of your careers here to get into what you do now, right? So we talk on the show, every iconic hero has a superpower, whether that's a fancy flying suit that they use to, that they developed with their genius intellect or their ability to call down thunder from the sky, or, you know, Superman's got super strength. In the rich world, heroes have what I call a zone of genius, which is either a skill or a set of skills that you were born with or you developed over the course of your career that sets you guys apart, that allows you to slay your people's villains and help them come out on top of their own journeys. And so the way I like to frame this for my guests, if you look at your skills and that you've developed over the course of years, probably a common thread that ties all those skills together. And that common thread is where you find your superpower. So let's talk about your guys' superpowers that you've developed in, you know, to build this company.
Oh, God, Chip, you go first.
What is great for me, and I hope it is for Adele, is that's exactly what Adele does for me, is that, like I said in the very beginning, I mean, the hours that she spent, you know, interviewing me, asking me questions about the process, what I went through, what were the techniques, the tactics, why were they used, at what times were they used, how was it all, you know, framed up, you know, what's the difference between an investigation and a hostage negotiation and what all that entails. And so we spent hours and hundreds of hours going through that. And the result of that, Richard, was that we pulled out so much intellectual property that we developed using Adele's discipline and mine together. And that's where it really becomes exciting, because I just felt like there was so much I could contribute to in the business world, but I didn't know how. You know, I didn't know how, like I said earlier, to pull that out. Adele did. And she just went right to it, because part of her background is that she started out as a journalist. And, you know, she also knew, like I did, how to interview people. And so when all this was put together, and Adele's using her background in advertising, because she also worked on Madison Avenue in the advertising sector. She worked for George Magazine when that first came out with actually John F. Kennedy Jr. So her experience was so broad, and the way she could connect these two worlds was astonishing to me. So as a result of that, we have some really cool stuff that is just so helpful for leaders out there. Like one of the concepts is forensic listening. And I'll let Adele talk about that.
Oh, God. You do it. You do,
all right.
You
all right. But I just want to say, to answer your question, Richard, that is for me is how I feel like that came about, was through Adele's ability to pull that out and extract that.
Captain Planet, you guys had your individual rings, but you know, when with their powers combined, right? That's where the really cool stuff starts to come out.
Yes. That's it, Richard. That's it. It is the combination. Right. Very cool.
So what is forensic?
Oh, forensic listening. Yeah. So the whole idea here is this, Richard, is that hostage negotiation is predicated upon the concept of active listening. Active listening, we all know, is the idea of the way that you hear somebody and respond to them while they're in a heightened state, aka crisis situation, a hostage event. If you can use these principles and tactics and strategies successfully, you'll bring that person down from a 10 to a 5 to a 1. And it's fantastic when people are heightened, when they're at their absolute worst, right? They're just rampaging. But what is more useful in a business context is what we've developed around forensic listening, because what we say is people's words leave clues. And if you're able to analyze a conversation after it's happened, that's what it is. Forensic listening is the art and science of examining a conversation after it's happened, so that you can pull out the intricacies, the nuances, the unstated narrative that somebody's holding within them. And you get such a more robust picture of who that person is and what's important to them and what they want out of life. And thereby, you're going to have such a greater communication with them. You know, your business with them is going to improve as well, because you know them. You know them at a level that perhaps no other competitor or person has tried outside, you know, their close family. So forensic listening is simply what we suggest to people, and this is something that your audience might be able to take away. It's become such a big thing. One of the large international banks we just recently worked with is adopting it to work out through company-wide. And here it is. We ask people to divide up a paper as they're taking notes, to find a space on their paper to develop a quadrant. So we call it the 4 D's. So here is what it is that you are going to have. You need notes, next actions. What's important? What am I going to follow up on? But this is going to give you a better sense of who that person is that you're talking to. So like in the top right quadrant, we call that theme development. And that is, what is it that person is saying? What perhaps repeated ideas, aka themes, are they putting out to you? And it might be totally separate from what the stated objective was of their talk or speech or address. Or if it's one-to-one, hey, I'd like to talk to you about, client engagement. But really, what you find is that they're trying to deal with absenteeism in the workplace and specifically in your team.
Yeah.
And so you start to pull on that and see that's important to them. And as they're talking, the top left quadrant, we're going to say that's the emotion. And oftentimes, as you know, Richard, when we're discussing, having a conversation one-on-one with somebody, or we're heightened on specific areas. What's important to us? What is it that we're really here to talk about? You'll notice that emotion is going to carry. Are they up? Are they down? Are they excited, or, do they give a sense of foreboding? So that's important. And on the bottom right, what we're going to call that is the voice, and that's their pitch, tone, and cadence. And again, you're listening to everything. When they're saying these, specific themes, what is it that the emotion is being talked about? And then their voice, is it going up, down? Do they seem heightened when they're talking about this? More rapid, or are they just slow? And then the bottom left quadrant, Richard, we're calling that body positioning. And we're differentiating that from body language. Body language is, more of a static event. And what we say in body positioning is that as people, we are constantly in motion. And if you can tie again, you're watching somebody, you can see when they're really animated versus when they're just, you know, their hands down by their sides, they're, you know, they might be looking away, they might be blading away from you, but you're going to notice these things and tie it together. Now, can you imagine, Richard, is that after you've had that time and you've, you know, you've taken these quick notes and you go back to your home office, your desk, wherever you are, and you go through that conversation, you find out that, all right, this was important to that person. This seemed to be really heightened here. They got very excited. You know, their body positioning was telling me that they are very engaged here, and their voice went up when they were talking about this. Okay. So you go back to them. Now imagine this. We're calling this targeted validation. And you go back to that person in, like, say, 2 weeks or a month later, and you say, hey, Bob, listen, I just want you to know that when you addressed our team like a couple weeks ago, and you talked about, you know, the idea that we need to be more connected to each other and, you know, suggested that we start doing that, I just wanted you to know that I really took that to heart and I put down 5 goals on how I was going to improve the team to do that and to reach out to other people and do something different. Right. And so, and one of the things that Adele notices and she says is so true. I mean, we can count on one hand, and I could probably count on 2 fingers. That's happened to us, right? We rarely get validated for what we're talking about, what we're dealing with, what's important to us. And if you can do that for somebody authentically, you know, not made up and not used to, you know, to just try to influence this person, but to do it in for the right reasons. Can you imagine, like, the difference that you've made in that person's life? How much more connected they feel to you and that they feel heard and understood.
So, and I would imagine, Richard, this is something you do naturally, which mm-hmm. is why storytelling was one of the things that you really picked up on and do very well. Like, you do all these things because this is so inherent in, like, ministry. Yeah. And like what you probably did when you first, you know, when you, what you studied. So you connect to people on an emotional level, right? And
right.
in a way where people feel really heard, which is natural for why you're doing podcasting, right? I mean, it's all like kind of makes sense. It all comes together.
Yeah, that's true.
I just want to push on a little bit and maybe discuss a little bit because I think it's a really fascinating concept. And first one, I didn't realize I was doing this all the time, but you mentioned the body positioning thing. And one of the things I noticed, you probably noticed me doing this, I keep my hands visible on podcast shoulders and above, you know, that's where we're at. I like to keep my hands visible because it just gives more of the body language thing. And I hadn't thought about
smart.
That, but it is the thing that I do all the time, right? And it's just because it's part of how we communicate with each other. And since we're, you know, restricted to what you can see, I always try to keep my hands visible. So I wanted to point that out. And just, you know, since our world has shifted a lot towards these video communications as being a primary thing, I've got my desk set up and I got a lot of the things set up that when I operate, that when I put my hands down on my desk, they stay up in a vision thing. And I just, you know, it just popped in my head while you were talking about that, that it's something that I actually actively do on calls, is just try to make as much of our animated part of our bodies available to be able to see, because it's an important part of communication. So that's just one. That's just a side note sort of point I wanted to make for people.
Yes.
A lot of people are having to communicate this way nowadays. And then the other couple of things I wanted to point out and just maybe chat a little bit more about. The first one is the difference between manipulation and what's the word I'm going to look for? Manipulation and influence, right? And the difference between manipulation and influence, they're both persuasion, right? And so persuasion is a tool. It's like a hammer, right? You can use it to build a house or you can use it to bash someone's brain in, right? Both of those things are things you...
That's what we use.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I always talk so about true. That is manipulation is when you use your tool of persuasion for your benefit. And leadership, right, is when you use your tool of persuasion for the listener's benefit or for the mutual benefit of the two of you, right? And that's where I just want to point that out, because you're talking about something that, like, these are advanced strategies. And when you use them, it's, you know, to go right back to our comic book stuff, with great power comes great responsibility, right?
Yes.
What's really interesting, Richard, though, is that we've been using these types of techniques at a very young age. Like, there was a study in our book called On Judgment and Decision Making mm-hmm. that said that kids develop their persuasion or convincing techniques as early as age 6. And they're doing things like perceived value and supply and demand. And like, They're doing it when they're like candy trading on a playground for like Halloween candy, right? It just like totally makes sense because kids are super advanced. Like, I mean, my kids are great negotiators. They are really fantastic negotiators.
I watched a TikTok the other day, and it's a little like 4-year-old kid and his dad. And it was obviously a produced video. Like the kid had been coached through this, but regardless, he gets up and the first scene is like how to persuade your parents. And he walks up to his dad and he's like, "Dad, can I have ice cream, you know, before bed or whatever?" And his dad's like, "No, you can't have ice cream before bed." And then the kid's like on camera and he's like, "Here's how I persuade your parents so you don't have to go through this again. Right? You can get ice cream whenever you want." And then it cuts to another scene where he walks up to his dad who's still sitting on the counter in the kitchen and he goes, "Dad, it's been a long day and I really missed you at work today. I want to sit down and hear about your day. Can we, can we have ice cream at the dinner table and hear about your day?" And the dad looks at him and goes, "Yeah, of course. That'd be really cool if we get the ice cream." Right?
Oh, Adele's got a great story for this. Adele, tell me.
So I have a 9-year-old who's masterful at this stuff. And Chip and I were on Zoom calls. This is during COVID. So it was horrendous. And she's supposed to be doing virtual school and it's super early. And she comes with a bowl of ice cream to my office. And she says, "Mommy, here's a bowl of ice cream for you. I just had one and it was delicious. And I thought you'd want one too."
Yes.
It's like,
you're like, right? I can even be mad. I ain't even mad. Oh, what? I have a 4-year-old right now and she does something similar. She will go and get it's just an example. It was like Nutty Buddies. They come with like 2 little like chocolate bar things.
Yes.
And she'll go get one of those and she'd be like, "I brought this Nutty Buddy for you." Right. She's like,
"Oh yeah."
She's like, "They're really good." And she wants to, what she's trying to do is she's trying to get you to share it with her. And she figures if she gives you one that you'll give her the other one. Cause we always talk about anyways,
she will be taking over the world soon. I love that.
Yeah, backs me up. So the other thing that I wanted to touch on, right? So between the persuasion, you know, being a tool for good or evil, the other one that I wanted to touch on was the idea of active listening, right? And so you broke it down into forensic listening and, you know, like the hostage negotiator bringing it down. And I just wanted to share one of my ideas on active listening. One of the things that if people have watched this show for a long time, they'll watch me do it a lot. And I do it in the way that I communicate with my team, when we communicate on sales calls, when we get on these podcasts. And it's a active listening technique, right? I wouldn't say it encompasses all of the things that would fit inside active listening, but it's just a technique that I use, which is when you're talking to someone and you ask them a question, like in our case, you know, what are your superpowers? And you guys respond with stories, right? I mean, you respond with whatever your stories are. Active listening to me has always been not just listening to your stories, but listening to your stories and then running them against the file folder structure of all of my own personal stories and looking for where those stories connect so that I can respond in kind with a story of mine, right? And so what happens there is that you develop a relationship based on how much of someone else's story you know, right? And so when you're going through, you know, and like our language reflects that. So if you have, you know, an stranger is someone you don't know their name, you don't know their story. An acquaintance is someone you know their name, but not their story. A friend is someone you know their name and you know some of their stories. A best friend is someone you know their name and you know so many of their stories that, like, on a podcast, you can say, "Hey, Adele, you have a story about this. Tell that one," right? You guys know each other's stories so well that the only way to go and, you know, deepen your relationship is to create new stories together. So in the context of a podcast like this or in a call or communication, when you listen to someone's story and then find a story of your own and respond in kind with those stories, what you're doing is you're basically creating the friendship, right? Basically, it's a relationship hacking technique to share stories with one another. And that's how I've always viewed active listening. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
No, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's really good. And I think, you know, one of the key tenets that you touched on there, Richard, is the idea of how emotion, you know, is a shortcut. It is, you know, one of the things we say when we ask people when we're giving presentations is, what's a memory? And, you know, a memory is an emotion. And that's something that is so powerful that it can cut, you know, through the weeks, months, years it takes to develop a very close relationship like you were just talking about. But if you connect to somebody on an emotional level, you can shortcut that. And it was like one of our good friends, Jeff Hurt, said in a presentation, he would always say, "Remember DIPMI." And DIPMI is, do I matter to you? And if you remember that person's story, just like you said, Richard, if you can tell it to back to them in a way that highlights the kind of emphasis that was important to them, man, you know, you are so much closer in being accepted by that person as a part of that experience with them, right?
Yeah.
And I agree wholeheartedly. It's so powerful.
Yeah. Just to add to what I was saying before, too, it's like kids have all these, like, you know, they have these foundational convincing and influence skills. And one of the things is, like, most of us go through life and really don't try new techniques. Mm-hmm. Like the person who got their way sulking as a kid is going to be a boss that's going to sulk their way into getting their employees to do what they want. They're not going to really change what they do all that much because it makes us uncomfortable. It's too risky. We've been doing the same techniques all of our life. And so even trying new ones, things like active listening to the point where, you know, you're telling stories, or forensic listening, like we talked about, or getting to someone's unstated narrative, which we talk about in the book, and taking somebody down a convincing continuum and using fear, uncertainty, and doubt. There's all these different things that feel so uncomfortable to us because we're like, but everything else I've been doing has worked. But I would just say to the audience, has it really worked? Or is it your default?
Is it?
You know, and like when we meet somebody. Yeah, exactly. It's like when we meet somebody we don't like, we're like, that person's a jerk. Yeah. I don't like them. Not because I did anything wrong to influence their decision.
Right.
Foundational, I'm not sure, like qualities of humanity is that we push our society forward with this sort of like unending thought that it could be better. Right. And that's where progress comes from, is we're always looking at it could be better. And we see that community, like as a community, as a species. But then individually, what you're talking about is like, hey, does it actually work? Could it be better? And if it could be better, can we try other techniques to see what we're looking at? And that's like individually, are we taking the time to experiment with, you know, our storytelling techniques or our listening techniques or whatever it is that we're working on? Because you could always be better. And if you take that sort of foundational human quality of it could be better and apply it to your own life individually, you can continually get better in any of the your areas of your life.
This is a little bit of a macabre quote, but I've always thought it was really interesting. It's like at the end of your life, you would meet yourself and that person would be the person that used all your potential. And that's the person that you meet against yourself. It's like, did you reach your true potential? Like, did you do everything you could to be the best version of yourself? And, you know, as a crazy ambitious person, and I think we all of us on this call are, and many of the listeners, right, which is why they're tuning into podcasts to better themselves, is like we all want to get to our best. And you have to continue to push. And things like how you influence others, how you convince others, don't rest on your laurels. Like, look for new ways. Look for new ways to be convincing. I didn't think I had, you know, a lot more to learn. And then I met Chip and I was like, wow,
you're like,
this is totally
all things
different.
To learn. Makes me want, I need to read the Convince Me book on that. And I wanted to do one more thing on this before I move on to my next question. And it's just, it's something that you mentioned experimenting and kids not wanting to learn new things. And it's one of the things that my wife and I do with our kids. We have four kids, so from like 4 to 14. And so we get lots of, I always tell people our kids are our social experiments that we're sending out into the world.
That's true.
And you know,
that's great.
So one of the things that like we do with our kids intentionally is we, with negotiation tactics, both for them and for each other. And so like I mentioned the Nutty Buddy thing. And so like we actually started buying snacks that came in pairs. This is just recently. And we started buying snacks that came in pairs and then teaching the kids like if they wanted a snack, they needed to find someone that wanted to have a snack with them kind of thing. And so like the younger ones are... they're learning, you know, like sharing, like negotiation tactics for sharing stuff like that. They're like, hey, mom, can I have a granola bar? And, you know,
love
granola bar too, kind of thing. And that's just like one example, but it's the kind of thing where we're like, we're always just like trying to give them different tools in their toolbox to combat that exact thing that you were talking about, which is that we learned something this one way as a kid, and that's the only way we've ever done it. And one of the things that I always am trying to do both for myself and for my family and then for my team is like, to give them more techniques in their toolbox to play with and to experiment with and to realize that like there's, I'm not sure why, but we always have fear of trying new things because it may not work out the way that we want. But like, but you can try again. Like try again. If it didn't work.
I love that.
You can do it over again. And so practice your stories, practice your negotiation techniques and, you know, more at bats, I guess, is the more at bats you get, the more freedom you have to experiment as you're going along.
And try different things. They may surprise you, right? I mean, like things that you would never have tried otherwise. And, you know, you take a chance on them and it works.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big fan of, for people who do things like running a podcast like this, doing sales calls or going to networking events, it gives you the opportunity to practice your stories over and over again, or practice your negotiation techniques, your active listening techniques in different ones, and just practice them over and over again. And because you're in, like, what do you call it? The low risk situation where, you know, if my active listening technique doesn't work with you guys, it's not going to like ruin my business or ruin our relationship. We're saying,
like, great. It's just like somebody you just met. It's not going to be a big deal. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I think is so fun is when I first started my business, and I was like 31 when I started my business, right? So I was a pretty young entrepreneur and like, who am I coming onto the scene? And I remember there was an older woman that she must have been in her 50s. I mean, like I'm saying this when I was in my 30s. And I remember her walking up to me and being like, you need to become a known entity before you can talk the way you're talking about business. And I was like, no, I'm approaching her wrong, right? Like, I'm coming off as too cocky initially, and that turns her off. So I actually wound up befriending her because I said, well, how would you approach the market if you were me? Being that, you know, I do know some things, but I don't want to come across as too arrogant. How would you approach it? And she became my mentor because she wanted to, you know, to show me through. And so I think many of us don't realize how we come across, right? And so even like getting other people to tell us, how do you perceive me? You know, and having an honest enough business partner or, you know, or colleague or spouse or whatever, that person will tell you, hey, this is how you're coming across. Like, do you want to come across this way? Like, do you want to shift those perceptions? I mean, I think it's much easier to do that in business than it is in life, but you have opportunities to make those differences and make those changes. And like, if you just read our book and you change one or two or three things about how you convince people, I mean, it's worth the price.
Yeah. I think, and it's interesting, right, Richard, is that, I mean, I know a little bit of your background as a result of our reading your website and so forth. And I know, like, I think it was at age 9, you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right? And you said that kind of got me hooked on this whole idea of, you know, sales and understanding negotiations. And then you also, I had a similar journey with the candy arbitrage that you got into, right, in school, right? Where you're, you know, you had to convince your dad to get you the big box of candy so you could sell it at higher prices. Me too. And I think, and that's, and you yourself, you know, understand that if I get a hold of different ways that I can be effective with people, then I know that is going to make me more successful than just about anything else in life. So I found that. So, you know, the three of us really are all about on a convincing journey, you know, I think. Yeah.
Things I tell my kids, and probably the only one who could repeat it back to you is my oldest son. He's 14 now. As I tell him all the time, that communication is one of the most important superpowers you can develop. And it's also one of the most developable superpowers you can get, right? Like, there's a lot of things, like, you want to be a great gymnast, you know, the only way you're getting into the Olympics as a great gymnast is if you came with some natural talent, right? And you got to put the hard work with the talent together to get there. Communication is not that way. Communication you can develop. It's an exclusively developable skill, right? Because we come out of the womb, has nothing to do with your body type or how tall you are and whether or not you're going to get into the NBA or anything like that. It's a 100% developable skill. And it is, to my knowledge, one of the most potent skills that you can pick up, because effective communication means that you can sell. It means that you can, you know, advance in your career. It means that you can create and you can put teams together. Like, you're unstoppable if you learn to communicate.
It's really true. And a lot of the ways in which we're taught to communicate are wrong. Like, for instance, like, I started out as a journalist. And one of the things they tell you as a journalist is inverted pyramid. Always start with your strongest point first. It's the lead, the who, the what, the where, the when, and the why. Get it all out all at once so people pay attention. And actually, like, 40 years of convincing studies and social science say that is the absolute worst way to convince anyone of anything. Because if you start with your strongest point first, all you do is make the person what?
Oh.
Dig their heels in. Yeah. They just believe what they believe even more when you start with your strongest. And then you have no place to go.
Yeah.
Right? You have no place to go if you start with your strongest point. So what you really want to do is start with the point of agreement and move the person down. So you start with their latitude of agreement. And then, you know, you move them down the continuum a bit by bit. And it's not like, it's not like a negotiation. It's not like, you know, I give you this if you give me that. Convincing is a much more methodical, you know, very intentional way of communicating with people. And what you want to do is get the person to convince themselves, right? It's like you want them to want to believe what you believe. And so you've got to give them information and you've got to question their certainty on something. And you can do that through using things like FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Like, certainty is one of the biggest barriers to convincing anyone of anything because they believe with the whole certainty that they know what they know and it's true. And what you're doing is you're coming in, moving them along.
Yeah.
And you're then
teaching
them just enough. Right. Mm-hmm. And you're giving them just enough information so they're curious enough. And we call that the convincing cliffhanger. They're curious enough to go look up something themselves and go find it themselves. And then all of a sudden they come back to you and the conversation changes because they're looking at it from a new lens. So, you're unfreezing their cognitive biases. Yeah.
Oh, I want to give you a short little framework that I use all the time with our storytelling stuff with our clients. When we're, and because I would bet that you have a lot of the same pieces in your framework that just have different names. And so we have something we call the hooked framework, which is how you, it's a persuasive training. And the first one, the H, is just like harness. It's like learning how to harness transformational systems, but it starts on the O. So the first one is observe the existing system. So trying to convince something of someone new, you start with where they're at now. Right? This is what you see and how you feel. It's the platitudes and the things that they're saying and thinking and feeling. Right? And you're starting that yes chain. Right? So it's observe the existing system. And then the next one is to outline the fail points. Right? So like, where does that existing system fail for people? Right? Does it fail now? Does it fail because of technology? Does it fail for certain types of people or in certain situations? Right. So you find the fail points. Then you ask a question. And the question is essentially, why does it fail? And what if we changed something? Right. And so what if we changed something here? What if we changed something there? And then you're going to essentially offer a theoretical solution. Right. So you endorse the theoretical solution. That's the E. And the theoretical solution is, hey, I have an idea about how we might fix this problem. Why don't you check it out? You agree. And then you move in and you actually build your new system. Be like, hey, here's the pieces of this new system and here's the things that we changed. And then you can actually dive in and teach that system. And it's all built on that persuasive psychology of like, you're not starting with your strongest point. You're starting with the existing system, what they already know, and then moving them through a series of things. And it sounds to me like you guys are teaching something very similar, probably with different names.
It is, I think. Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, I think the convincing cliffhanger is a lot like what you talked about where you're offering them a solution. But the interesting thing about, I think, our approach there is that might be slightly different or maybe the same in some ways, is you get them to make the hypothesis and bring it back to you.
Yeah.
When you offer a hypothesis, sometimes people, they rebel against it. So it's almost like how you even position and the word order of that hypothesis is like so important. And like, you know this better than anybody. So yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we spent a long time here talking about your superpowers. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about fatal flaw. All right. And just like every Superman has his kryptonite or Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad, you probably have a flaw that's held you back in growing your business. Something you struggled with. For me, I struggled with a long time with perfectionism, kept me from shipping product or getting things out. I also struggled with a lack of self-care, which generally came out in working too much and not having good boundaries with my clients. But I think more important than what the flaw is how have you guys worked to overcome that so you can actually build what you want to build here with Convince Me?
Yeah.
I know what mine is.
I got what it is right away. So for me, Richard, coming into this, again, with my background, it was so difficult for me to talk about myself and what I did and that kind of thing, because I was taught, you know, this was also ingrained in me, and I'm sure it was for you, Richard, you know, you don't go around boasting about your accomplishments and what you've done and so forth. And you certainly don't do that in the bureau. I mean, you keep your head down and you work, and it's a team effort. You never say I, never. And so the idea here is when I started out on my own before I met Adele, man, I was having a horrible time trying to describe to people what I could do for them and why I, you know, as a result of what I went through, could help them. It just wasn't connecting because I wasn't comfortable telling the story about, well, this is why I know it works because I did, you know, 1, 2, 3. And when I started working with Adele, she realized it like right away. Like, you got a problem that's got to be fixed, you know? And so, because, you know, her work in advertising, she just knew instantly, this is never going to fly unless you can get comfortable with this.
By the way, Richard, he still hasn't mentioned the fact that he was on a team which saved 22 people from a hostage barn.
Yeah.
So he is a real life hero.
Yeah, but Richard, you know this, right? It's a team effort. But I had to get comfortable saying, yeah, but you were part of the team, Chip, right? Is what Adele would say. I'm like, yeah. So, okay, let's talk about that, right?
But he's still won't do it.
Yeah, I can't stand it. But there are other parts that I got better at, you know, with doing that. So, anyway, that was long-winded. Adele, what do you got?
About that, but let's talk about Adele's first.
Oh, my God. I would say it is that I am too fast. Yeah. Right. Like, I think that's one of the things. I mean, sometimes I want to take on 6 projects at one time, and I am taking on 6 projects at one time. And like, literally, the weird part for me is I work better that way.
Yeah.
And I think when I used to stop myself, I used to say, okay, you can't take all these projects on at once. I used to try to, you know, slow myself down. And it's the speed, although it can be a negative, it's also a positive. You know, I mean, but I have to stop. I have to go, okay, you know, where could this go wrong? I tend to just go too fast. And I think other people are keeping up. And I think I lose some people sometimes. But I think I've figured out a way to slow down and to maybe write things out. And I have a number of strategies where I you know, because I'm a writer, I feel like sometimes I explain things better when I write them.
Mm.
So when I'm giving instruction to someone and I'm going like 80 miles an hour, I'll stop and I'll be like, here's the outline. Mm-hmm. Of what I have in mind. Here's how I'm visually seeing this at the end, because I'm already at the end and they're in the beginning. So, like, I think that's hard for some people to deal with. Yeah. My one client said, Adele, I'm like just starting the journey and you're on 5. She's like, you're already at the end. I'm like, okay.
I think it's interesting because it's the flip side of your superpower, right? It's like you have the speed, but you also then have the speed. And the thing that, because I'm similar, right? I'm very fast paced and I'm always like, my family, my wife even is like, okay, you're already like, you know, 3 years into the future. You got to come back to where we are today. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm done with that.
Bring it back. Mark your gut.
No, I already figured it out. And like, I have this similar kind of a problem where like, once I've figured out the solution to a problem, I no longer care about solving it, even though it's not solved yet. I just solved it in my head.
Totally. Like, why haven't you got me?
You got to have implementers there to help you with that. But I want to just give you something that I think was really helpful for me in that, since we sort of share that, is for me, it was learning how to say no first was a really important skill in learning how to say yes. And so practically what that meant for me is, I'll just put in the context of our business, is getting really clear about what our offer was, right? This is our offer. Mm-hmm. And if it's outside of this offer, it's always a no, right? Mm-hmm. Always a no if it's outside of this offer. And learning how to say no first allowed me to say yes a lot more to things that fit inside that world, right? Inside that offer. And now, because my problem with saying yes too much before I learned that, you know, how important the no was, I was saying yes to things that didn't necessarily move us forward or didn't help us get where we go. And so one of my good friends and mentors now, he's the director of marketing for the Pokemon company in the US. And, you know, he's had like $1 billion online. Right. So when he says things, I listen. But he said, like, if you want to grow your business, he's like, essentially, after you've learned to say no, then say yes until it hurts and then fix the pain. And
interesting. Kind of, I love that.
I really learned in my business was like, okay, so once I know what to say yes to, I can say yes at whatever pace I want to say yes to. And eventually I'm going to get to the point where, okay, I've said yes to so much that it hurts, but they're all helping us move in the right direction. So now I have to go back and fix the pain. Where are the people that I need to unlock? Where are the systems I need to build? Where are the things that are going to make this continue so the pain is no longer there, but the action is still happening? And we...
Oh my God, we have the same thought process. Yeah. I do the same thing. I do all those things that you're... I've had the same problems and I've solved them in similar ways. Yeah, I mean, one of the things I find with that, what you just talked about too, was also like, and this is the death of the entrepreneur. And Chip is like this too, right? He's good at a lot of things. I mean, he can help people with a lot of things. It's like deciding what the things are that you're going to focus in on, right? It's hard because we can do a lot of things, right? We can do a lot of things. And so it's hard to know what to focus in.
I could help people with you know, website, copywriting, writing books, building masterminds. We've built several multi-million dollar businesses over the course of the last 15 years. And, you know, and I can say yes to all those things and still sometimes, too much to my own chagrin, still do. And I'm like, nope, shouldn't. But it's learning. We do this one thing in the podcasting world. And when I started doing that, when I started narrowing down to like, this is the one thing that we're saying yes to, is things that fit in. Basically, if it's not storytelling in the world of podcasting, it's a no, right? Mm-hmm. We 8.5x'd our company last year.
I love that. That's amazing. Yeah. And that's the same thing for me when I went from like communications, doing all kinds of public relations work, to crisis communications. I'm like, anything related to a problem that a business is occurring, I want to know about that. I don't want to do any of the positive stuff. And so what wound up happening was some of the positive stuff just still came, but like it was always wrapped up in the problem. And I much preferred that.
That's
you
true,
know,
though.
I much preferred that. And I think Chip and I we're on the cusp too. Like we're on the edge with our business where we're really saying no to a lot of trainings that don't make sense for us. Like if we're just going to do a keynote, people aren't going to walk away moved and really learn from our stuff. We're not interested in that. We'd rather do a mastermind. We'd rather do a workshop. We'd rather do a breakout. We'd rather do something that people are going to walk away with and go, man, that's going to do something for my business, mm-hmm. for my life, for who I am. Right, Chip?
Absolutely. It makes a lot of sense now with what we're experiencing. Yeah. Cool.
I'm going to flip in and talk a little about what you mentioned, Chip, with a fatal flaw. And that was the whole bringing yourself forward in your own story. And I think, you know, we are told all the time that there's no I in team. Mm-hmm. Like that's the pat answer from people. There's no I in team. And I've always hated that because first off, it's not true. A team is made up of I's, right? It's made up of individuals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always bring this back to the one thing you're not supposed to talk about in the world is politics, right? With people. But politically, you have both sides of our spectrum. You have the extreme right, which holds up the individual to the exclusion of the community. And then you have the extreme left, which holds up the community to the exclusion of the individual. And both of those fail because the human experience doesn't work unless you have both the individual and the community, right? And so that's where one of the things that we talk a lot about just on this podcast and in the stuff that we talk about with our storytelling with, you know, all of our clients is that you are important to the work that you do. Your perspective has value. The way that you tell your story has value to other people. And, you know, whether it's politics or it's storytelling or it's team building or wherever it is, the individual is required to build the community, right? It's required to build the team. And so your thoughts, your perspective, your experiences are valuable to the community in whatever context the community comes up in. And my favorite metaphor for that has always been in the science world, we talk about hot and cold, and we realize that cold actually isn't a thing, right? Cold doesn't exist. Cold is just a word that we use to describe when we start to feel uncomfortable, right? But it's all just measurements of heat. And so community is the same way. Community doesn't really exist, right? Community is only a collection of individuals. Right. And when we get a collection of individuals on a business thing, we call that a team, right? Or it's a term that we use to describe a collection of individuals. And then you realize that both are vitally important, right? You can't have teams, you can't have communities, you can't have culture without individuals. And so you have to hold both of those up. And so for people like you, and I know I struggled with this for a long time because I grew up with that whole mentality of, you know, there is no I in team, that learning to tell your own story, it's not just useful, it's vital to the success of the team and it's vital to the success of whatever the community's goal is.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
Awesome. So I got basically two more questions for you because we spent a long time on the superpower and fatal flaw. I'm going to talk about your common enemy. And so your common enemy is, you know, every superhero has their arch nemesis and it's a thing that they constantly have to fight against in their world. So in the world of convince me, I want to put it in the context of your clients, the people that you work with, and it's a mindset or a flaw that you're constantly having to fight to overcome so you can actually get them the result that they came to you for. So in your world of crisis management, what is the common enemy?
People believe they know how to handle it and they don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever their instinct is wrong. Like, I mean, like it is. And a lot of leaders really fall into this where they're really good at their job. They're just not good at managing a crisis. And it's not to say they're not good at managing their team, because they might be. but they just don't know how to handle the issue that is presented. And admitting they need help can be a huge mindset shift for them. And just the level of unfairness they feel when a crisis occurs to them. You know, they spend a lot of time on why something is so unfair and how they did something right for 20 years and how this one thing is going to taint their legacy and how they want to make sure it doesn't. And they will spend a lot of time there. Right, Chip?
Oh, it's so true. And I, again, it's one of those things I didn't know until I got into this world. And Adele showed me, you know, the kinds of things that people will just raise up as an obstacle that doesn't need to be there, right? It's the of their own making. It's an impediment that they've put in place and they think it's a real thing. And it's they think it's external, but it is totally internal. And it's something that they created. And it's the only way through it is through, let's drop this idea of what it's what Adele coins as the fairness fallacy. It's so unfair that this happened. We were doing everything right. This is just one thing and it's been blown out of proportion, whatever it is. Yeah, it sucks. You should spend about 5 minutes doing that and then getting to, all right, here's how we can help. But it's that leap, right? That's the,
it's tough
that's the
for
enemy,
people.
Is that leap of like, all right, I'm ready to get to solve now. How do I do it? What do I have to do? And that takes...
One of her clients said that he wanted to throw his cell phone in the ocean when we were giving him advice. He's like, I'm so freaking pissed. And he dies. I want to throw my cell phone in the ocean. And then we finally brought him around and he solved it. Yeah. So.
Relevant or not, I'm going to just say it. And maybe it's, you know, I have 4 kids in. Our last one is just finishing her toddler years. It almost sounds to me like one of the strategies we use with our toddlers is, you know, they have big emotions and, you know, you have to feel the big emotions and then get it out of your system so we can move on to the solution. And so like I have 3 of my kids are daughters. And one of the things I always do with them when they were younger, at least, is like, let's throw a pity party, right? We'll sit on the and we will cry and we'll bat our eyes and everything. And then once we're done crying, once we've got it all out, then we can move on to, okay, let's solve whatever the problem was. But they have to feel it first. And that's where you were saying, like, take the 5 minutes, feel the emotion and then move on.
That's so true.
That's great.
That's really cool, Richard.
That's really fun.
Yeah.
Or if you grew up in my house, it was like, get over it.
Yeah, fix
don't
your
feel
face.
Anything. Fix your pain. What's your problem?
The pity party is my favorite. It only works when they're young because then, like, as they get older, like, my 14-year-old is like, I'm not throwing a pity party with your dad. That's stupid. Like my 4-year-old is so here for a pity party.
Can I call you up and have a
pity party? I mean, absolutely. If you can have a pity party, I'm here for you. Well, for me, it's just...
It's a service you offer.
It's just an acknowledgement. Like, yes, we have the feels, right? They are there.
Yeah.
And you have to sort of acknowledge the feels, but then you can move on to, like, what's the truth of this situation and how do we need to deal with it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah. My metaphor I use for my wife and other adults that I work with is I call it the truth train. And I was like, the caboose is the feelings, right? It's always part of the train. Every train has a caboose, but it's not the engine. The truth is the engine. It's what drives the train. So it's like, we can have the feelings. So the flip side of your common enemy is your driving force, right? So just like Spider-Man fights to save New York or Batman fights to save Gotham or Google fights to index and categorize all the world's information. What is it that you guys are fighting for with Convince Me? What's your mission?
I think, you know, one of the things I am, and this is why I was so, you know, just excited to work with Adele is that she got excited by the same kind of concepts that I did and bringing them into the world. And I love the fact that everything that we've been working on, either with crisis clients or the immersive training or the book on convincing strategies, everything works, right? It will absolutely help people get through it, what could be the worst time of their lives or their business or whatever that is, or help them develop, you know, in better sales and in better client relationships as a better leader. To me, that's what's exciting is that it's not just like, might work, maybe not. No, it's going to work.
They're tested.
Yeah, in both of our disciplines. And that's to me, ultimately, the thing that I can be. It's both a source of pride and it's excitement because, you know, there's a new challenge around the corner every day. So that's for me.
I guess I would say also that it's just so exciting to see it come to life. Yeah. Right. Like what you're saying too, like in a book.
Yeah.
In a training. And people walk away and they're happy and they're excited and they're changed. that's really, you know, if we can do that just for, you know, some folks that we come in contact with, then I think we've done what we were supposed to do.
Yeah. It's the ripple effect you're leaving with people, right? Like once they learn these skills, it changes who they are and everything that they touch from that point forward for the better.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. That's one of the things I like. I don't teach communication as a life skill. Maybe I should someday, but like it's genius because it is, like I said earlier, it's the one like superpower that you can develop. And if you have someone that can teach it to you, and they can teach you persuasion and they can teach you, you know, crisis management, because, you know, we're all going to deal with those kind of things, right? We persuade people every day. It's like persuading your toddler to eat their, you call them their greens, or getting your mom to take you to the movies when you're a kid or whatever it is. There's always persuasion and
all that stuff. Yeah. It's in everything we do.
Right. Things are not going to go, you know, as much as we would like to go through life with rose colored glasses, shit happens. And so you're going to have crises at some point. Learning how to manage that, deal with them, just makes the world go around in a better place.
The Hero Show will be right back. Hey there, fellow podcaster. Having a weekly audio and video show on all the major online networks that builds your brand, creates fame, and drives sales for your business doesn't have to be hard. I know it feels that way because you've tried managing your show internally and realize how resource intensive it can be. You felt the pain of pouring 8 to 10 hours of work into just getting 1 hour of content published and promoted all over the place. You see the drain on your resources, but you do it anyways because you know how powerful it is. Heck, you've probably even tried some of those automated solutions and ended up with stuff that makes your brand look cheesy and cheap. That's not helping grow your business. Don't give up though. The struggle ends now. Introducing Push Button Podcasts, a done-for-you service that will help you get your show out every single week without you lifting a finger after you've pushed that stop record button. We handle everything else: uploading, editing, transcribing, writing, research, graphics, publication, and promotion, all done by real humans who know, understand, and care about your brand almost as much as you do. Empowered by our own proprietary technology, our team will let you get back to doing what you love while we handle the rest. Check us out at pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero for 10% off the lifetime of your service with us, and see the power of having an audio and video podcast growing and driving micro celebrity status and business in your niche without you having to lift more than a finger to push that stop record button. Again, that's pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero. See you there. And now, back to the Hero Show.
So I think that's a good place to get to our last question I have for you here, which is your guiding principles, right? One of the things that makes heroes heroic is that they live by a code. For instance, Batman never ever kills his enemies. I just learned recently, Spider-Man always pulls his punches. He doesn't want to kill people. So, you know, as we wrap up, do you want to talk about the top one or two principles that you use regularly in your life? Maybe something that you wish you had known when you first started out on your own entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, Chip? I think just one of the things in watching Adele work, I really admire the fact that she sticks to the principles of what she knows is the best thing for the client, even though they don't want to hear it. That's one of the harder things, right, Richard, is that you might know how to fix it. And Adele does usually within 5 seconds when we go, you know, and we work with a company or whatever, it's pretty evident. She knows immediately. And part of that is going to be, there's going to be a big, ugly frog they're going to have to swallow somewhere down the line that usually got them there in the first place. And they don't want to do that thing. And they will, you know, Richard, they'll talk about everything else under the sun. That one thing that they absolutely must do in order to break through that obstacle. And they'll do everything but. And Adele will keep bringing it back.
What Chip does that I don't do is he reads people and sees the perfect time where they can accept that truth. Mm. And I think that combination really makes our skills exceptional. I mean, really, Chip is amazing at reading people. He can connect to anyone he meets. Like, people instantly just have a feeling of comfort with Chip. And that cannot be understated in business, because not everybody's able to do that and not able to do it quickly. And what's business based on? It's about people, right? And so if you're not able to make that connection and not able to know when that perfect time is to give someone what they maybe don't want to hear or what they need to hear, hugely important. And Chip can do that in really, he can do that so well. And I've learned so much from him in that as well.
Chip, I call that superpower empathy. I don't know if that's where you would put it, but that's one of the things, is being able to understand the other person and then communicate and operate in ways that they understand and will accept. Not one of my skills, but one of my best friend's skills. And I see it regularly. I'm definitely more on Adele's side, where I'm like, listen, this is the thing that you need to do.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah. And that
takes all kinds, you know?
But she won't, and she won't give up and back down in the face of, look, you're just obviously not the right, you know, team for us. We're going to move on. Adele's like, maybe not. I wish you luck, you know?
Which is bad.
You know, that's no. It's good, yeah. Because ultimately they know, they're like, dang, you know, there was a lot of money on the line and she was willing to walk away from that. They remember and respect that. And that's the difference, I think, is that, you know, you hold so tight to the convictions of what you know is in their best interest.
And that's why the crisis business is largely referral, because it is other people being rich. She helps me. They helped me through hell.
Yeah.
And you need to talk to them. Right. Like, when we get a referral, it's like, you need to talk to them.
That's how it comes out. Exactly.
Talk to them. But you need to call them immediately.
So I think that's a good place to wrap our interview. But I do finish every interview with a simple challenge I call the Heroes Challenge. And I do this to help get access to stories that we might not otherwise find on our own. So the question is simple. Do you have someone in your life or in your network that you think has a cool entrepreneurial story? Who are they? First names are fine. And why do you think they should come share their story with us on the Hero Show? First person that comes to mind for you guys.
Oh, my gosh. Ooh. I think Corrine is great with her. Corrine and Barry, they have a great story. They grew a business from a government contracting at a time when that was just, it was a really hard time to break in. It's always been a hard time to break in, but they were able to build their business and successfully grow it really with relationships and trust. And I think they're great. They're a great entrepreneurial team.
Awesome. Well, I'll see if we can reach out afterwards and maybe get an introduction to them. We don't always get them to say yes, but when we do, they tend to be really good podcast interviews. So in comic books, there's always the crowd of people at the end who are cheering and clapping for the acts of heroism. So our analogous to that, as we close here, is we want to know, where can people find you if they want your help in crisis management? Where can they light up the bat signal, so to speak, and say, hey, Chip and Adele, we really need your help. But I think more importantly than where is, who are the right types of businesses to reach out to you guys?
Yeah. So we're focused on Fortune 500 companies, typically companies that make over 20 million or more in revenue is about the range at which we start to talk to folks. And you can reach us on our website, convincingcompany.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us today, guys. I know it was perhaps a little hectic with three people on the interview, and because I don't do that often. Hopefully I did well with that, managing two people.
You were great. You
did, yeah. We appreciate it.
But I really appreciate you guys coming on and sharing your story and just talking about what it is you guys do with crisis management and persuasion and just communication in general. So what I want to do here, we'll make sure that the links for the Convince Me is in the thing. And the links for the book, are you guys on like Amazon? Do you guys have the Audible version done already?
We are. And Richard, I'm going to have to run because I have to go get my kids from school because it's 5:30 on the East Coast. So they're primed and ready to go. Okay. Thanks so much.
Bye, Adele. So is the book, do you guys already have like the book available for purchase?
Yes, it is. It's out. It's exactly. It's at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever, right, people can get it. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, then I look forward to, you know, we'll put the links to the book below for you guys. And again, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Do you have any final words of wisdom for the audience before I hit this stop record button?
No, all good, Richard. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chip.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Hero Show, where we work to shift the cultural narrative around entrepreneurship and celebrate the heropreneurs who make our world a better place. Don't forget to visit our website at theheroshow.tv. where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. If you found value in our show, we'd truly appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or better yet, share it with a friend to help us spread the message of entrepreneurship as a force for good. Curious to learn more about the stories and insights of these incredible heropreneurs? Check out our in-depth interviews and resources on our website. Together, let's support and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs as they embark on their own heroic journeys. Join us again next week for another episode of The Hero Show, where we'll continue to explore the world of heropreneurs, their superpowers, and the positive impact they bring to our lives. Until then, stay heroic.